favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Anymore. This is a weird time. You're having it much worse, I know.
You just seem like, I feel like you're like manifesting all of my fucked up shit.
Remember, we share a brain.
It's
right now, true. I'm physically beat and hectic with my life.
And I'm just emotionally just like mm-hmm. Emotionally, it's fucking rough right now, dude.
Emotionally, it's rough. And your pace is different now, too. It's the opposite of my pace. So now we're... Now it's like our yin and yang is like fighting each other, dude.
We're out of sync, dude.
Oh. It's not fair.
It's just not fair.
A week ago, we were happy.
A week ago, I was okay.
Okay, yeah, that's true. You're dealing with very well a week ago, though, see?
Huh?
So you're dealing with all this stuff very well a week ago.
It's true. I'm dealing with it okay now. Yesterday was great. I had a great day yesterday, but I woke up this morning and the universe was just like, die, bitch.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, I know the feeling. I wake up at 5 now.
So, ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
I haven't done that since...
Last March?
Yeah, since last March. Ugh.
Oh, the look in your eyes.
No, it's okay. We're talking about a happy movie time. Positive experiences with the Ari Aster film. Let's go. Let's do it.
The happiest of movies.
Yeah.
I know. There's no fun segue for this.
No. There's plenty of fun. This is a great family film.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. a family film.
Yeah, it is. It's about the togetherness.
All right.
Like,
well,
two beings, you know, to get...
Our yin and yang is just being, like, just, like, getting curb stomped into fucking oblivion.
Exactly. Or it's like, I'm driving somewhere, and your head is just out, you know? Because you want to get, like, the air and see the views, you know? Or just right now, there's something in the way. Which way we're going to turn, I don't know.
Yeah, either we're going to hit a deer, or I'm going to get fucking the... Yeah,
let's avoid the metaphorical deer, but in the right direction. There we go. That's the game. That's the, you know.
Don't take bong hits at a party.
Oh, I do have one in my pocket, though.
We're both just like, drugs.
Wait. Hereditary. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. God fucking damn it,
is it
Anthony.
Too late?
God. Okay, let's just get started.
Yeah, let's go.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Hey.
Happy birthday, Anthony.
Hey. I wish I had more energy. It's not my actual birthday, but it is the
I'm going to be opening every single episode this month.
Okay.
It's just going to be happy birthday because it's your birthday month.
That's true. There it is. Yay.
Yay.
This is it, guys. Been waiting since last year. I don't even know what to say right now.
It's true. I've been thinking about this, like, just the fact that March is just creeping up on us again.
I know. What have we been doing? What's going on?
I've just been in this, like, constant state of limbo. Yeah. Like, my last big, like, social outing was going out for your fucking birthday.
That's right. A year ago.
And...
You'd have written ahead so many episodes. You were on it.
Yeah.
And then America, and then the world. No, then China, then America, then the world.
Yeah. We got fucked.
We did.
So bad.
But you know what? Fucked or not, we managed to scramble our way over here to this March. With another glorious crop of movies, the first of which...
It's true.
The first of which is a modern classic.
Instant.
Oh, instantly. Yes,
instantly
absolutely.
Praised. Instantly just like, Jesus Christ.
I know. And that movie, listeners, from the title, obviously you clicked on the thing already and are pressing play. Unless you do it with your eyes closed.
In which case, you know, more power to
just
you.
Just don't do it while you're driving, yes. But it is. Alex, what is it?
It is 2018's Hereditary, directed by Ari Aster.
Damn, 2018.
It doesn't feel like it was that long ago, but it was 4 years ago.
No, 2021, 3 years ago, right?
8, 9, 4. Bitch. Well, it came out in 2018, so it came out in June of 2018.
Yeah.
So in June of 2021, it'll be 4 years. 2018 to 2019.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, let me just pretend in my heart that 2018 wasn't that long ago. Wow. Oh, wow, I've been in LA for that long. Okay, cool. So, IMDb does tell us, though, that this wonderful first birthday selection can be described as a grieving family is haunted by tragic and disturbing occurrences, and that's it. That's all they fucking said.
That's literally all they had to offer. This is,
okay, we started off my birth month with the absolute dumbest IMDb synopsis we've ever had, I think. Yeah, this is probably stupid. Correct. There's a lot more going on to this film. There's like a lot more.
Yeah, you think?
By tragic and disturbing occurrences. Okay. All right, well, whatever. This is directed by one of the newer GOAT contenders.
The new kid on the block.
Yeah, new kid on the block, exactly. Mr. Ari Aster, as Ms. Webster stated up top. Produced by Kevin Frakes, Lars Knudsen, and then Buddy Patrick. That is such a weird ensemble of fucking names.
I don't know, man.
Oh, darn it. I need to get the swear jar. Ah, whatever. By the way, listeners, I cussed so much last week because we were having such a good time getting drunk.
I didn't even notice until Anthony like texted me and was like, dude, I swear so much in the last episode. And I didn't even notice. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't even occur to me.
Yes, as a duo, we really went Scarface on that one, didn't we? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'm going to make a conscious effort for my birth month to be more civil.
Are you?
No, I'm not. I'm just going to try not to be such an asshole, which, you know, I'm not going to do that either. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Why are you setting yourself up for failure, Anthony Fuentes? No.
You know what? I got to make an attempt. Okay, this was written by, though. Same guy, Ari Aster. See? You know, a writer-director right off the bat. That's like...
Yeah, dude.
That's like putting his dick on the table as I'm here to change horror. That's what he's doing.
He's here to, like, I am here to wreck your shit.
Mm-hmm. He is. That's exactly it. And, of course, this stars the wonderful Toni Collette.
Holy shit.
Who I am so pissed she did not get an Oscar for this thing.
I'll never get over it.
She earned that one. Like, holy crap.
I'm terrified of her for the rest of my life.
Oh, me too. Those eyeballs. When she did the Toni Collette stare,
Yeah.
And, of course, this also stars Alex Wolff, Millie Shapiro, Ann Dowd, and Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. I can't put names to faces, but...
Okay, Alex Wolff is the brother.
It's the brother, I would imagine, yeah.
Yes. Millie Shapiro is Charlie.
Oh, that's Charlie?
Yes.
Okay.
Ann Dowd is the friend.
Friend of the mama?
The friend of the mom, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Gabriel Byrne's the husband.
Oh, wow. That poor husband. He was just trying to be supportive.
That poor son of a bitch.
Yeah, he's just like... No. Everybody be happy and we're family. We're
He's like
family.
Trying. He's like yeah. actively trying. He's the only person who's actively trying in this family and everyone else is just like falling apart at the fucking seams. Yeah.
You know,
and everybody... But also, he's the only one who's not like biologically tied to their bullshit.
That's true. He's just there.
Yeah.
Oh, poor bastard. Anyway. Oh my God. Okay. So this one, of course, is distributed by A24, which we haven't covered too many of their movies, but when we do...
We've covered The Vavitch.
Yes. The Vavitch. That's right. And I'm sure there'll be more that are coming
out. I'm sure. AT4 is kind of like the goalpost at this point for like indie-ish.
They're the anti-Blumhouse.
Oh my God, they are. I think we mentioned this in the Witch episode.
They're like, what are you doing? Is that commercial ass? No, we're going to do the opposite.
I've seen quite a few of their films, and each time I walk away feeling... Very weird.
Right? They're like, oh, what? You're bringing back a franchise and adding quips? We're going to kill a child within 30 minutes. How about that?
Child, a child. A 13-year-old child.
Jeez. Anyways, this was released January 21st, 2018. And, of course, it hit a wider release June 8th, 2018, in which I had probably one of the dumbest screenings I've ever been to. Because... teenagers don't know how to watch horror movies.
It's true.
Yeah, so that June, I was very annoyed.
Wow, between Hereditary and Midsommar.
Both Ari Aster. Yeah.
No, I'm saying like you just had shitty experiences.
Oh, in the theaters, yeah.
Both times we went to go see Midsommar. Mm-hmm. That's a conversation for when we cover Midsommar.
Exactly. Now, this was budgeted at $10 million, which is pretty small for 2018 dollars for sure.
Oh, for sure. It's tiny.
Yeah. This made $80.2 million, which is pretty goddamn good for that amount they spent. Now we're here. We're ready to talk about our new boy, Ari Aster, because he's definitely one of my boys. I don't know about you, but...
I mean, he's definitely on my radar. Like, yes. I want to see kind of what he's up to? Like, what's going on in his weird little
fucking...
It's 4 hours long.
This next film?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of, like, jumping ahead, but you brought it up, so we're going to fucking talk about it.
Oh, my God, please. I have no... I'm going in blind. I have no idea.
Yeah. His next film is called Disappointment Boulevard, and it's 4 hours long. And it's supposed to be, he described it as a 4 hour nightmare comedy.
That sounds delightful.
And it's 4 hours long.
All right. I'm in it.
No one knows really anything else about it. It doesn't even have a Wikipedia entry yet.
Well, you know what? That's a day one. And I'll be in the shittiest theater with these dumb teenagers still watching it. You know what? Learn how, because that's how good the movie is.
But that's the thing. When you're a teenager and when it comes to films like Ari Aster's, like, I feel like there's a way to watch them, and when you're a teenager, I don't think you're quite there yet.
No. I agree. I mean, as a teenager, obviously, I was more of a nerd, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, more likely to participate, but...
Also, I was very active. Like, I loved going to the movies when I was a teenager. Like, I knew how to sit there and shut the fuck up, because also, my dad would sit there and fucking, like, elbow me in the fucking ribs if I was, like, being a little shithead.
Oh, yeah,
which, rightfully.
We were raised with respect. Now, dumb teenagers. There's a lot of them.
It's true.
Yeah. Anyways, enough of our riff about teenagers. Guess who's not a teenager? Oh, this guy right here.
Ari freaking Aster.
Yep.
So, Ari Aster was born on July 15th, my brother's birthday, 1986 in New York City.
He's not that much older than I am.
No. That's one of the things that I noticed.
That hurts my heart right now.
Are you feeling it?
I'm feeling worse than when I was moving all those boxes earlier.
He's 34. He's turning 35 this year.
Let's just keep going. Okay. Let's just keep going.
Sorry. So he grew up in a family of creatives, with his father being a musician and his mother a poet.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
As a child, he became obsessed with horror films, frequently renting them from local video stores, saying, quote, "I just exhausted the horror section of every video store I could find. I didn't know how to assemble people who could cooperate on something like that. I found myself just writing screenplays."
Oh, man. That's what a creative family do to you right there.
It's true. Huh. Aster also recalled going to see his very first movie, Dick Tracy, when he was just 4 years old. The film featured a scene where a character fired a Tommy gun while a wall of fire was behind him. Aster reportedly jumped up from his seat and ran 6 New York City blocks, down which his mother had to chase him.
Oh, that is wonderful.
Isn't that a great story?
You know what? I respect that tremendously, because, again, my family's a very big cinema family. Movie-going experiences were some of the most important ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, in 2004, Aster enrolled at College of Santa Fe in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where he studied film, and then he graduated in 2008. And was accepted into the 2010 class of fellows at the AFI Conservatory Graduate Program.
Oh, he went to AFI, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Damn.
And he earned a Master of Fine Arts with a focus on directing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So between 2011 and 2018, Aster wrote and directed 5 more short films, often teaming up with his friends from the AFI Conservatory.
It's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard, yeah.
We have a wonderful campus. No. God damn, this guy was just...
He got it.
To make brilliance. Wow.
I mean, he got the support, I'm assuming. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, that's a good combo right there.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, specifically, Aster scripted and directed 2 particularly provocative short films, The Strange Thing About the Johnsons and Munchausen, which got the attention of a little company called A24.
Okay, The Strange Thing About the Johnsons is very creepy.
Yeah. I haven't watched it. I Googled it.
It's messed up.
I just read the synopsis and I was like, I'm clicking out of this.
No, right when I finished Hereditary, I'm like, oh, this short film's on YouTube. And I watched it because I wanted more. And I'm like, whoa, this is equally bad. Like, not in the, it's bad. It's like, it equally makes me feel really horrible in the inside. So.
Well, yeah, because the content matter is very, well.
Yeah, you know what, listeners, if you're ever going to want, if you... find that you love this film and you want to see some of his other previous work and Beyond Midsummer, read the synopsis first. Yeah. It's pretty fucking...
So, The Strange Thing About the Johnsons stars... Basically, it's a movie about members of a suburban family in which the son is involved in an abusive, incestuous relationship with his father.
Yep. That's all you need to know.
Make your decisions moving forward from there.
Just know the tone of Hereditary translates directly to that film.
Point is I read that sentence and I was like, that's all I need to know. I'm good. I'm done.
Oh, now I want to see the other one. Anyways, Munch. So Astor originally pitched Hereditary as a family tragedy. Careful not to call it a horror film outright, because of course, as you know, with this podcast, horror just has that stigma for some reason. Even though, as we've pointed out before, this bitch wins awards sometimes, but not this one. So
it should have.
It totally should. I know. I'm getting triggered too. Okay, I get it. But as a fan of domestic dramas, Astor incorporated themes of the genre into a script, envisioning a film rooted in family dynamics, trauma, and of course, grief. However, Hereditary is equally inspired by family dramas like Ordinary People in 1980, The Ice Storm in 1997, In the Bedroom in 2001, as it is by classic horror films like Rosemary's Baby of 1968, and also a shitty fucking director that I hate as a person, and of course Don't Look Now from 1973 and The Innocents from 1961. God damn, he went hard on these influences.
He basically was just like, here's every movie I've ever loved, and I'm just gonna make it into one fucky movie.
He did. He's just, yeah, he's like,
and oh. I use fucky as a not a pejorative in this term.
It's yeah, fucky. I think that's like, there's no way around that. Yeah. So he interpreted the film as two halves, which are quote completely inexorable from each other.
Inextricable
from each other. It begins as a family tragedy, then continues down that path, but gradually curls into full-bore nightmare. Yeah, okay. He knew exactly the movie he wanted to make, and he fucking made it. That's what that is.
I like that he's at least able to describe it as two halves, because that's how I... Oh, yeah. That's how I mean, even my first time watching it without knowing anything really about that, like about it, I was able to discern like the point in which it turns from like family drama to a fucking horror film.
Oh yeah, I remember I was actually, I wouldn't say bored, but I was like, oh, this is one of those slower like movies like The Witch or whatever. Like in my mind I was like, that's what this is. Yeah. And then of course the half happens.
Right. Well, or like another A24 film. Have you ever seen The Black Coat's Daughter?
No, I have not.
Okay, very similar, very slow, only it's like the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
For 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
It's very slow.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I mean...
And then the last like 10 minutes, I'm just like, oh shit.
That's what they were building towards. Yeah, this one did it, and then I remember right from the occurrence, I was like, well, I am in this now. this is, ooh.
Yeah.
Where's this gonna go? And then it went even harder. I'm like, yeah, damn. Exactly. So Astor wrote detailed biographies and backstories for all the characters before even writing the screenplay, which I'm noticing is a trend with these very visual directors.
I think, and this is just me spitballing here, like as we're getting into more like modern directors, like people like, you know, around our fucking age range, this is something that I think. You see from people who play video games.
Yeah. Well, there's always a lore aspect to video
right,
games.
Exactly. Yes. Like people who play like heavy world building games.
Mm-hmm. You want your universe established.
Exactly. Like, I've always been the same way. When I sit down to like write something, like before I even think of the story itself, I think of the universe in which I want this story to take place in.
Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, it provides the rules. Exactly. And you have to know how to function within the rules.
You need to know the rules of what you're taking.
Exactly.
You know, exactly.
You're just like, oh, no, that is a ghost in a sheet now. See, look, scary. not in Astor's world.
Right. Or same thing with, like, when it comes to characters, right? Like, like for me, I think it makes it so much easier to write a character if you have their whole story and motivations and pains and loves, like,
exactly.
All
you know
mapped out.
What makes them tick, and then you know what, like, I don't know.
I just,
a lot of details.
It's true. I just also, like, that's one of the things I just love about writing.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, it just, I can talk about it forever.
Oh, me too. But, of course, for Astor, the film itself is a running metaphor for family trauma and grief.
Say it ain't so.
No, I didn't get that at all. It is operating all the way through, and at the end, the movie is still about how trauma can utterly transform a person, and not necessarily for the better, which is true. Very, very true. So the script reflects a real-life incident from 2004 in Marietta, Georgia, in which John Kemper Hutcherson accidentally decapitated his childhood friend and passenger Frankie Braum on a telephone pole. After the latter had leaned his head from the vehicle to relieve the symptoms of his inebriation. Bad move. Bad move. So Hutcherson then drove home with Brahms' headless corpse in the car and fell asleep until a passerby, walking with his toddler, noticed Brahms' body still in the truck the next morning and notified the authorities. That's fucking gruesome.
Isn't that terrifying? That's fucking horrible. I didn't know it was based off of a real-life incident.
Seriously, Jesus. I do remember him talking about this. I forgot the real-life incident part. I never knew the details of it. I just knew he based off of that. So, yeah.
There's your details.
Oh, no. Hey, don't drink and drive, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if he was drunk. I just think the other... I think the guy who stuck his head out the pole... Or head out the pole. Great. Good job. Mm-hmm. Head out the window was drunk. I don't know if he was drunk. But he could have been.
I mean, his head was out the pole at some point. So, yes. Yeah.
Fuck. But also considering that... he drove home with a corpse in his car and fell asleep immediately.
He's just on autopilot at that point.
I mean, yeah. We see it in the movie.
We do. Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's a good assumption of...
Like, he could have very well not been sober. We don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so when it comes to casting this movie, Toni Collette was one of the first actresses that Astor sought for the role of Annie Graham. And the matriarch of the movie.
Yes.
And everyone knows Toni Collette. Mm-hmm. God, she deserves so much for this movie. At first, Collette wanted to turn their asses down. She was reluctant to work on a horror film, but the script's grounded approach to the genre convinced her to commit to the project, saying, quote, Astor just really understood the dynamics of the family, has such an understanding of what it is to be human and what it is to experience loss, unquote.
I mean... accurate. The thing is, like, this could have been, like, a one-trick pony. Well, with that quote, like, I'm like, okay, well, but the thing is, if you apply that quote to, let's say, Midsommar, and just move family with a relationship dynamic, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the dude just knows humanity.
He has a very good understanding of interpersonal dynamics.
And his mom was a poet, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. He has some emotional basis for understanding, at least trying to understand people. Yeah.
Gabriel Byrne agreed to play the family's patriarch, Steve, and Alex Wolff, who previously collaborated with Byrne on the HBO program In Treatment. Did you ever watch this?
No, I've heard about it, but I never watched it.
Okay, I was just curious. And was cast as the Grimes' son, Peter.
I want to watch it now.
They're both in it. And then cast in her cinema debut, 14-year-old Broadway theater actress Millie Shapiro was actually a winner of a Tony Honor for her performance in Matilda the Musical, and it earned her the role of the daughter Charlie.
Oh my gosh, she would have killed it as Matilda.
Yeah, she did.
She did, obviously. Now I kind of wish I would have saw that, because Matilda is such a fantastic film.
Well, yeah, it's the musical, so it's a little different, but...
I know, but, like, that's such a good story. Dude. Oh.
Okay. Hell yeah.
All right.
After watching Shapiro's audition, Astor was immediately relieved, quote, because I knew the chances were slim that I would find somebody who would be right, unquote, having left Charlie's personality a little bit more ambiguous than other characters in the script.
That's cool. All right.
And then the producers also said that it worked out well that Gabriel Byrne and Alex Wolff had worked together. Also, Alex and Millie knew each other from school because then it made Toni Collette kind of the outsider, which mirrored Annie's character and feelings of alienation within her own family.
Oh, that is great. Which you can see. That is yes. That is very...
Because they all knew each other, so.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool. Ari Aster also requested that Alex Wolff and Millie Shapiro go out to eat in character a few times, and they would sit for up to 3 hours in silence while Millie wouldn't speak and Alex would try to get her to talk.
That is smart.
The two would also go out in character, and basically they had to buy Millie a sweatshirt, and Alex had to figure out what kind of sweatshirt she wanted. Huh. So these are those kinds of, like, things that they would do.
I mean, it creates a... external basis to draw from, so when they do the scene, it's just like
they have on. They have history.
Yeah, it's
they
turned
have,
on.
Like, right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really cool.
That's like, smart. That's fucking smart, dude.
God, I can't believe. So I think I didn't mention it during like Ari Aster's like section, but this is his feature film debut.
Yeah.
Just so we're clear for anyone who's listening who might not be familiar.
Insanity.
Like, this is his very first feature-length film, so.
Oh, man, at 31, too, tossing it out there, dude. Way to go. Anyways, the film began shooting in February 2017 in Utah, good old Mormon country. And the
fucking beautiful.
Yeah, I've heard. The exteriors of the Graham family house and the treehouse were shot in Summit County, Utah, and the cemetery scene was filmed at Larkin Sunset Gardens in good old Sandy, Utah.
Sandy, Utah.
Now, we don't have a lot of Utah listeners, so, but, you know. I mean, I'm sure it's wonderful if you guys are.
I mean, it's really pretty.
Yeah. That's, I don't know. That whole section of the Colorado, everything. You know, you just got to get through Nevada. Alex Wolf decided to go method for this film and insisted on being referred to as Peter during the production. After filming his very last scene, he symbolically introduced himself to the crew as Alex. Okay. Well, that is a zoomer right there. That's...
Good lord.
Actors. So.
Well, at least he was not like a full blown like crazy person about it.
No, he wasn't Daniel Day-Lewis about it. That's true.
No. Oh my god. He's like 23.
Yeah. Yeah. No, actually, you know what? To have those instincts at that young, good job.
I think he put in the fucking work.
He did. He definitely did. So, and he nailed it.
Okay, that was 23. So he was what, like 19?
Yeah.
In this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's a little boy.
He's.
Damn.
A child.
Damn. So, in an interview, Wolf explained that he wanted to actually break his own nose for the scene. His character slams his head on a desk. Wow.
Okay, maybe a little bit of zoomer
tendency. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. A little bit like, no, this will get the shot. You're like, no, do we like you already? You don't have to. You don't have to prove yourself here.
Just like me.
It'll get me a lot of likes.
God.
Sorry, Astor respectfully turned his ass down and told Wolf that they'd give him a soft cushion desk for the scene. Wow, and he fucking still hit it like a motherfucker. That's a lot of cussing there. Okay, 3 pennies in there. So
we're not even drunk. We elected to do this episode stone cold sober.
Yes, yes. Sober and exhausted. Wow. Anyways, we're here. We're here. We're doing it. When it was time.
Drinking tea, for Christ's sake.
Drinking Dr. Pepper.
I love Dr. Pepper.
I love Dr. Pepper.
Me too. It's like God. I don't drink soda anymore, but like every now and again, I will still indulge in a Dr. Pepper or a Cherry Coke. But
Cherry Coke also. Oh, yeah. That made me happy. You know what? Have you tried Cherry 7-Up?
No.
Cherry 7-Up is amazing.
That sounds wonderful.
No, it's like even better than Cherry Coke.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I believe you.
I don't know, I might have a nostalgic attachment to it because my dad liked it back in the day. Mm. But, you know, that was back in the day. It's like a Cherry 7-Up and a Little Caesars $5 pizza. That's the family that's dinner life. Right there. Yeah.
That's like you're living your best life.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
I get
that's
that.
That's pre-suburb Anthony right there, dude. That was my, Oh, boy. All right, let's get back
Sorry.
To the movie.
Sorry, guys.
It's just Dr. Pepper's delicious. So...
Dr. Pepper, sponsor us.
Please. I know, right? With the amount of dick jokes that we do. See our alien episode for that one. So, when it was time for the scene to be shot, Wolf slammed his head into the desk, only to discover that the top was foam and the bottom was hard. He subsequently dislocated his jaw for the scene. Holy crap.
Yeah, I think it had previously been dislocated, so it just kind of like aggravated.
Popped
back out
again, yeah.
So, ouchies. So, I mean, he ended up hurting himself anyway, yeah, so.
He's got a loose jaw. Mm-hmm. Poor boy. So, God, I can't even imagine the shit he'd do at that age. He's already willing to, like, just break the fucking nose.
I know, he's literally willing to slam his face
mm-hmm.
into a hard desk
mm-hmm.
for art.
And they give him a soft desk, and he has an even worse injury. Oh, that's our Zimmer boy right there. Respect. So, when it came to the special effects in the movie, Ari Aster insisted on all the effects being practical.
Fuck yeah, he did.
Yup. An example being, at about an hour in, to make the chalkboard write on itself, the special effects team put a magnet in the chalk and put a magnet on the other side of the chalkboard to make the chalk move. It was very difficult to get a small magnet inside the chalk and, of course, make it work smoothly, but somehow these fuckers did it.
Yeah. But,
yeah. No, I dig that. So that's old school shit right there.
Totally. And I just, because like in the movie, like the chalk is like this big.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
How much for listeners, Alex?
Oh, it's very tiny.
Mm-hmm. They can't even hear you. They can't even see you wave your hand away.
Fuck you. You know what I meant.
Audio medium. Anyways.
No.
All practical effects here, baby.
Fuck off. You know what I meant. So, God damn it.
Makeup and special effects coordinator Steve Newbern and his team also built an animatronic puppet for Charlie for her decapitation via telephone pole.
Very good. Thanks. Yeah.
This scene led to the makeup team's biggest challenge, of course, in the movie. Originally, the car Charlie rode in was meant to be mounted on a track that would lead it and the animatronic puppet into the telephone pole. But changes meant that the effect had to be performed by a fully operational vehicle driving at 60 miles per hour.
Yeesh.
Aye, that's scary as shit. For the gag, a collapsible inner skull was built. This skull was meant to mirror the damage created on another quote-unquote Charlie head that was built to represent the aftermath of the accidents. Tests were carried out in the makeup shop using a baseball bat to simulate the telephone pole's impact. Oh, smart. Even without the planned track guiding the car, the effect went off perfectly. Quote, the driver, he nailed it the first time. Steve also said that it looked fantastic, but, quote, they only used a few frames of it. It was a little too disturbing.
Whatever.
It was very disturbing.
I can only imagine.
I can't even. So, I remember on Reddit, people would occasionally put that like in an imager link. If to click on something, people are like, oh, risky was, click.
Yeah. And it was fucking...
It was the head.
It was her head?
It was the head. Yeah. Good old internet, you know?
Fucked up.
Toni Collette has called Ari Aster the most prepared director she's ever worked with. According to Alex Wolff, the original cut of the film could have easily pushed over 3 hours. The cut footage mostly consisted of family dialogue. And I gotta say, though, the family dialogue's really good.
It's great, but also I would have lost my shit. Like, that movie, like, I was like an anxious cat the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Like, if it was, like, over 3 hours, I would have needed, like...
Oh, you're, like, even more tense. Cool. More tension. Yeah.
Awesome. Great. Mm-hmm. Cool. Mm-hmm. Could I need a fucking Xanax to watch this?
I feel it. So, Hereditary's advertising campaign has been credited for keeping Charlie's death a secret from viewers, notably by showing Millie Shapiro prominently in the trailer, even though Charlie is alive for only one quarter of the film in total, really. So this deliberate this deliberate mislead, yeah, I did it, I got this, is...
French boy.
I know, I was thinking that too. The fucking French chef from the Muppets. So I was getting them by the end of this. So this deliberate mislead is similar to the horror classic Psycho, and of course the other horror classic Scream. Yes, where you market your desk like a motherfucker.
And you just fake everyone out.
Oh, brilliant. But there's a reason why those films are so many years apart, and of course this one's after that. People will catch on. Like, you know.
Well, but people didn't.
No, that's what I mean. They didn't catch on because studios aren't doing that tactic all the time.
It's true, but also, like, I feel like some try every now and again to, like, emulate it, but, like, it has to be a fucking good movie.
It does, exactly. And again, notice how these are all essentially 30 years apart.
It's true. However, I mean, like, we have Janet Leigh and then Jamie Lee Curtis.
What? Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Like, we have a mother-daughter duo in that's the first
true.
Two.
That's true. Somebody do a blood test on that little girl.
On Millie Shapiro. Right.
So Hereditary premiered at the Sundance Film Festival on January 21st, 2018. And, of course, the trailer for the film was released shortly after on January 30th, 2018. And, of course... On Anzac Day?
Anzac Day? I don't know. Just reading this. This is just funny.
All right. Well, on Anzac Day in 2018, the trailer for Hereditary played before the PG-rated family film Peter Rabbit in a cinema in Innaloo, Western Australia. Fucking Australian names. Jesus. We have Australian listeners. You guys are wonderful. Your names are weird. According to a report... And your slang is weird. According
I love to, Australia. I want to go so fucking bad.
Oh, I know. I want to go too. Like, and especially, like, they have good food.
It's beautiful. Like, literally, just, like, give me a month on, like, Byron Bay and all my problems will be fucking solved.
Keep me away from the spiders and let me eat a kangaroo. That's what I want. I want those two things.
You
want
to eat a kangaroo?
They have kangaroo meat. Yeah.
You can eat kangaroo... I thought... What?
Yeah, they have kangaroo burgers, dude.
Oh my god!
You can get a kangaroo burger in America, it's just not going to be as authentic. I almost bought one, but I was poor at the time, and it was like $17.
Okay.
Ah.
We have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions. Australian listeners, is that a regular thing, or are people just kind of like, that's like a tourist trap thing? Let me know.
Yeah, let me know too. I fall for it because I fall for shit like that all the time.
Tourist trap, Anthony Fuentes.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'm like, oh wow, it says best coffee in the world.
Oh no, it's like that scene in Elf when he goes to New York City and it's just like,
congratulations,
best coffee, and he tries it and it's dog shit. Yeah.
Oh, you guys did it. Elf being the opposite film of Hereditary.
Opposite ends of the spectrum. Yes. Elf makes me feel nothing but unbridled joy.
Oh, that's funny. It has James Caan in it, too. That's crazy to me. Sonny from The Godfather. God damn. Anyways.
You know who's also an elf? Peter Dinklage.
That's right. Oh, that's right. That's great. So, yeah, of course, back to Australia. According to a report in the Sydney Morning Herald, the Hereditary preview was accidentally shown to family audiences and created a small panic in the theater. The theater was apparently full of families, including at least 40 children.
Get the fuck over it.
Oh, poor babies.
Welcome to horror. Here's your crash course. It's fucking Hereditary.
Oh, those kids are going to be into some shit later on. I'll tell you what.
Future goths of Australia.
Oh, future goths if we're lucky. Future Mantons in there at some point.
Hopefully not.
Like one or two, you know?
You know what? Yeah. And Australia has like no COVID cases. They'll be fine. They'll figure it out.
That's true. Way to go, Down Under. Anyways, the film was released in the United States by, of course, A24 on June 8th, 2018. And it was released in the UK by Entertainment Film Distributors, very generic name, on June 15th, 2018.
The day after my birthday.
There you go. Hereditary grossed $44.1 million in the United States and, of course, good old Canada up north, and $36.2 in other countries, for a total worldwide of $80.2 million against a production budget of, as stated earlier, $10 million, which means this bitch made some money.
It made some money.
It made some very good money. And, of course, in the United States and Canada, Hereditary was released alongside Ocean's 8 and Hotel Artemis and was originally projected to gross $5 to $9 million in its opening weekend. Similar to the debuts of course, A24 horror films like The Witch, and It Comes at Night, which got 8.8 million, and of course 6 million respectively. So 88 million, Jesus.
I was gonna say, I was like, if The Witch made $88 million
in one weekend,
I would have been doing backflips across my apartment.
Everybody gets it now.
Everyone understands. God, I love The Witch.
That's such a good movie. I can't believe I hated it at first, and then
when I first saw it, I didn't get it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first time I watched it, I didn't really get it, and then the second time I watched it, I was like, this is so fucking good.
I just blame 2016 Anthony on just, you know, he had a lot of issues going on at the time.
There was a lot going on for exactly. 2016 Alex also.
Yeah, exactly. 2000, when would we cover it? 19?
Yeah.
All right, that version of me was way cooler.
We're just progressively getting,
There. We're getting there. Snail's pace, but we're doing it. Mm-hmm. So, it was the widest ever release for an A24 film, with, of course, 2,964 theaters, besting the 2,553 of It Comes at Night.
Have you seen It Comes at Night?
No, everybody talks shit on it. I haven't seen it yet.
I remember seeing, trailers for it.
The trailer seems so scary.
Well, here's my fucking problem with It Comes at Night. Is, I saw trailers for it, and, I wanted to watch it, but, mm-hmm. There was just always something, stopping me from seeing it.
It's a little too ambiguous for exactly. What they were selling,
and I know, that's fucked up of us, every time I watch the trailers, I'd be like, this is really fucking weird. This mm-hmm. is very creepy. I'm very intrigued, but I simultaneously don't know enough to be, inspired to go see it.
Exactly. Because, at that point, I got to spend my dollars on it.
Yeah, at that point, I have to, put pants on, go to the movie theater. At this point, I would cut off my left foot to go to a movie theater.
Exactly. I would watch It Come at Night if I was like, hey, everybody's safe and we're doing this. Yeah,
if it was the only thing in theaters, but mm-hmm. theaters were open, I'd go see it.
It would probably make 88.2 $8.8 million in an opening weekend. Yeah, no, right? Definitely. I think so.
Oh, God, I miss movie theaters.
Fucking God. Damn it. Okay.
Swear jar.
I know, swear jar. So, out of Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds an approval rating of 89% based on a, wow, that's a lot, 368 reviews. Woo. To hold that percentage, damn. And an average rating of 8.28 out of 10. That is, I mean, earned. The website's critical consensus reads, Hereditary uses its classic setup and the framework for a harrowing, uncommonly unsettling horror film whose cold touch lingers long beyond the closing credits. Why don't you work for IMDb?
It's true. Also, quick, flip it and well, like, quick going back.
Uh-huh.
Ocean's 8 opened this weekend, or the same weekend.
Yeah.
I did see this in theaters in lieu of seeing Hereditary in theaters. Oh my God,
and you have a horror podcast? Lady.
Okay. Yeah, but also, I like women. I don't know what you want
good
from
point,
me.
Good point. Oh, right. That was the female one.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. Ah, it's okay. That works. I thought it was... Well, also... I forgot.
Also, let's keep in mind at this point, like, my friend group,
mm-hmm.
like, aren't all huge horror nerds like I am. Yeah, so, like, when I like, when we were just like, oh, it's your birthday, because this came out the week of my birthday, and it was like, Hereditary, Ocean's 8.
Yeah.
Hereditary. And I was just like, fuck.
Yeah, I know it's my birthday, but I probably shouldn't crush all of their souls.
I know. I was just like, if I took, because like, if I took, it was like two of my friends, and then, and it was just like, okay, if I go see Hereditary, I'm just going to be sitting there probably crying and being like emotionally just like, you know what I mean?
Oh my God, especially not necessarily knowing the kind of scenes you're going to be watching. Just,
no,
yeah
that not knowing
been,
anything.
Ooh,
I would have been ooh. Like, yeah, I would have just ruined friendships.
Hey, it is fine. 3 months later, you had your own podcast. So you know what?
Wow.
The horror was there in your heart the whole time.
It's true.
Yes. 3 months after Hereditary, we did it. Fucking did it. That's right. Thank you, Ari Aster. I'm going to directly, you know, attribute this to you.
Art.
No. You know, you made a good movie, though. So
yeah. We're going to get to it in a minute, but a lot of things came out in 2018 that I think are directly responsible for my interest in horror.
There you go. Okay, see? Help him pull the trigger right there.
Yeah.
So, of course, writing for Rolling Stone, Peter Travers, who I think is actually a very good reviewer, gave the film 3.5 out of 4 stars and called it the scariest movie of 2018, saying, quote, it's Colette giving the performance of her career, who takes us inside Annie's breakdown in flesh and spirit and shatters what's left of our nerves. Her tour de force bristles with provocations that for sure will keep you up nights. But first, you'll scream your bloody head off. Oh, Travers.
Jesus
you dirty
Christ.
Dog, dude. Look at you. All right, dude, I'll scream my bloody head off right now. That's a good review.
I so, know, right?
For, oh, I used to love the AA Club, or the AV Club, the AA Club. That was a fucking review.
That was
name.
A Freudian slip if I've ever heard one.
I used to love the AA Club, but then I didn't need it. I'm doing great.
I'm doing fine.
For the AV Club, which was hot shit.
It's because of the name.
Yeah. AA Dowd gave the film an A-, stating that, quote, in its seriousness and hair-raising craftsmanship, Hereditary belongs to a proud genre lineage, a legacy that stretches back to the towering touchstones of American horror. Unholy prestige zeitgeist classics like The Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby. Remarkably, it's a first feature. The suspicious debut of writer-director Ari Aster, whose acclaimed disturbing short films were leading like a tunnel into the underworld to this bleak vision.
Holy alliteration, Batman.
Man, okay, you know what? Travers got more years on you, buddy. You know?
Prestige zeitgeist and towering touchstones.
Oh, boy. Jiminy Jillikers, Batman.
Yeah.
There you go. Batman and Robin reviews right there, dude. A.A. Dowd, you are Robin.
Jesus.
Probably
how does it fucking feel?
Yeah, huh? Mr. Second Fiddle over there? No, it's mess. Talking shit.
So, it's because you have problems with the AV Club.
They were so good for so many years.
I remember everyone liking them and then no one did.
They redesigned their website and they got bought out by like Gawker or something. It was stupid. It wasn't Gawker, it was somewhere else, but they messed up everything, dude. They did. Ah, hurts my heart to think about it now.
I can tell. You seem really upset.
A tragedy on par with Hereditary, I tell you. So,
On par with Hereditary? Okay.
As soon as they changed the website and fired their writers, I put my head out the window right there. But you know what? We just kept going forward. That's life.
You're still waiting for that telephone call.
No, I'm not anymore. I'm doing great. Okay. I'm not. So, on Letterboxd.
Oh, he's laughing, but there are tears.
Just let me have my Dr. Pepper.
Let me just drink my...
Oh, I told myself I'm not drinking soda. So, on Letterboxd. What is this misery-prone episode here? All right, now, on Letterboxd. Hereditary has an average 4.0 rating. Out of over 360,000 reviews. Holy
yeah, dude.
Shit. That is a big one. So let's talk about them. You want to talk about them a little bit? Brat Pitt, our girl. Oh, probably the best reviewer on Letterboxd with 4.5 stars. Quote, dude, what do you mean you don't worship King Payment? Lucifer's most obedient servant and master of the arts? Oh, you're still stuck on the Babadook. Grow up. There are new LGBT demon in town. And anybody who's anybody is getting naked for him. Hashtag hail. God, I love this woman. Oh, she's great.
Yeah.
Well, so Beck with 4 stars. Quote, if anyone ever clicks their tongue around me again, I'm calling the police.
It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
I think everyone was a little on edge with the tongue clicking thing in 2019. It was pretty bad.
Yeah. Even in the theater when the last click happens, the level of like, and oh, even those dumbass teenagers were like, ooh. Look at Tim Allen, like,
the Scooby-Doo,
rump roll. Yeah, roll. Oh, that's funny. Okay, so Lauren was 4.5 stars. Quote, anyway, a movie and a 2-hour reminder to take your birth control. By all means, please, take your birth control.
Seriously, by the end of it, I was just like, ah! Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Never.
Iana with 4 stars. Quote, Toni Collette, I just wanna die. Me. Oh, big mood.
I saw that and I was like, oh, same. Same.
God, that's such a heartbreak. Ari Aster does crying scenes very well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that one in Midsommar. Oof. Oof. So, Marion. We've had Marion here mm-hmm. on here a couple times with 3.5 stars. Quote, very hard to rate a movie that I know is made very well, but that I also never want to think about ever again in my goddamn life. Okay.
Agreed.
So, if you want a good laugh, please just go read these reviews because, god damn it, they are funny.
There's so many. And also, it's hard to find, like, the one, like, the lower reviews because this is a 4.0 rating, like, an average rating.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, like, for the most part, it's rated very positively.
Mm-hmm.
I think, in my opinion, mm-hmm. What's keeping it from being rated so, like, further up is, like, it's one of those, like, either you think this is a fucking masterpiece
mm-hmm.
or you just didn't fucking get it.
That, I agree, totally. And then, of course, it's 360-whatever-thousand reviews. Like,
right, it's not
going to
be...
There's no way to move that nail up anymore. Like, people yeah. have settled. And you're right, the ones that are like, 1 star, they're there. They've like, already established like, themselves.
It's mm-hmm. very hard to convince them.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, of course, we got some theory shit to talk about.
Alex's Theory Corner.
Penny the Swear Jar, yeah.
So, I mean, I wanted to talk about this a little bit because this movie kind of shifts the tone in what neurotic personalities look like in horror films
yeah.
for me. There's a wonderful book called House of Psychotic Women, and it is a...
That's a wonderful title.
It's a great book, and mm-hmm. it's a semi-autobiographical... Well, it's an autobiographical horror theory book where mm-hmm. like this person is like talking about like her experiences like with like trauma herself
mm-hmm.
from a biographical perspective and how it relates to certain horror films and like their experiences with trauma.
Yeah.
The problem, and I wanted to use it more as a reference because I literally skimmed through the whole book looking for something that I could really like dig my freaking yeah. claws into for this. That is more about, like, psychosexual theory and, mm-hmm. like, trauma from, like, a sexual perspective.
So, Midsommar, gotcha.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot more, a lot easier to quote for Midsommar.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, it's a great book, highly recommend it. That's kind of what I did use to get inspired for Alex's Theory Corner.
Let's do it.
So, cinema is full of neurotic personalities, but... few things are more fascinating than a woman losing her mind on screen, I think. Mm-hmm. Horror as a genre provides the most, let's say, welcoming platform for female neurosis.
You know, I have seen women lose their mind on screen and in real life. I'll take on screen any fucking day.
Well, it's one of the things that House of Psychotic Women kind of spells out so well, mm-hmm. is that why horror films are so cathartic to crazy women.
Okay, that's interesting.
And it kind of spells it out in the way that, like, in the very typical way that, like, a lot of people relate. Like, it's cathartic. It allows us to, like, explore our anxieties in, like, a safe way. It, you know, all these things that, like, when most people, like, look at women who experience violence on a day-to-day basis and are like, why do you like horror films? Like, why do you purposely seek out something violent? There's, like, a whole stock of answers that we can give, right? Yeah. And that book does a great job at breaking those down and being like, well, yes, but also.
Yes. Okay. All right.
It's all very interesting. So in 2018 in particular, it became this like unspoken year of exploring inherited trauma in film, I think.
Huh.
And it's just one of those like coincidences, I think. Because like, you know, there's trends that people kind of will follow and kind of not realize it.
Yeah.
Like we'll have... I think we talked about this when it came to, like, home invasion films in, like, 2017 or something. Like, we covered a couple of them, and we were like, oh, these came out within, like, 2 months of each other. They're the same movie, pretty much. Like,
it's... Deep Impact Armageddon, you know?
Right. Deep Impact Armageddon, same shit. or The Core, Deep Impact Armageddon, all the same.
Right. They're like, who's making it? Warner Brothers, let's make one of our versions of it. Let's do it. Inherited trauma. Okay, whatever. Well, the money.
It just all kind of happened at the same time.
Yeah.
So, while most of it was explored through the lens of white women, everyone was kind of feeling out what trauma meant to them in 2018. But that's a conversation for another day. There was a lot going on in 2018. We were like kind of at the tail end of a lot.
So you're saying is we were very close to getting our shit together and then COVID happened as a society.
And then also, you know, like... A lot of shit happened with, like, the Black Lives Matter movement.
That's true.
Like, a lot happened in 2020 that, like, rocked our shit.
Oh, my God.
But 2018 was, like, a very big year for kind of acknowledging trauma.
Yeah, exactly.
The question at the center of Hereditary is basically, is whether the family is being terrorized by a demonic entity of some kind. Or if they're suffering from mental illness and whether both of these things are inherited or not.
Yeah, that seems to be the thesis essentially running through it. Yeah.
The demon is inherited from Annie's mom and her involvement with a coven, and the mental illness can also be traced back to Ellen, who had established mental health issues alongside her son, Charles.
Hmm.
So it's a very interesting like thread to follow.
Yeah.
When you're looking at like mental illness and trauma and how, you know, things like suicide and mental illness can kind of obviously trickle down.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the cool thing, again, what distinguishes the film, too, because I feel like a lot of other horror films will stick to, like, that was a demonic presence, and they're totally fine until the demon came.
Right.
Here, they're like, no, they're not fine at all. They have a bad relationship. Like, there's nothing fine about these people going into and this challenging them.
Yes, and it's interesting because you can... argue both, you can also argue one side or the other.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very interesting to kind of see, because if you want to argue the demonic presence side, you can say that the demonic entity has been a presence in their life from the fucking get-go, which is why they're all so fucking high-strung.
Yeah, it's influencing
everything.
Yeah, exactly, that makes sense.
And because you see the symbols of the of Paimon everywhere, from even the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Good movie.
So, Annie, as a pivotal character in the movie, paints the picture of inherited trauma and asks whether the tragic events of the movie are just that, tragic and accidental, or part of something larger at play in the demonic sense.
Oh, okay.
And her as the kind of crux of the movie, I think, is very, very smart, because she's the one who's really, like, the center of all of it.
Yeah.
Because, like, her son isn't aware of it. She's the one who has a foot in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very interesting, especially how things played out.
Oh, yeah.
So Astor's film does establish that it's not one thing or the other, but rather both. Annie and Peter both begin to exhibit signs of schizophrenia, the same thing that ended up plaguing Ellen later in life. Schizophrenia, for those of you who don't know, it's not an entirely genetic disorder, mm-hmm. but one brought on by both genetic and environmental factors. So it's not a question of nature versus nurture. It's mm-hmm. nature and nurture.
Exactly. Yeah. Kind of makes it a little worse. Yeah.
So you really need like a truly perfect shit storm. Mm-hmm. And trauma can play a huge part in that. Like huge, incredibly stressful events can lead to, you know, mental health problems. Yeah. Shocker, I know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Humans are a lot more fragile than people want to give us credit for.
Yeah.
Me moving offices and...
Right. You're just like, change, I hate it.
And my arms.
My arms hurt. So in Screen Crush's excellent article about inherited trauma from movies in 2018, they kind of sum it up best. Quote, are Annie and Peter doomed to inherit Ellen's, quote, demon? Or do they have a choice in the matter? For many people coping with mental illnesses, the answer often feels dire, and the final moments of Astor's film offers a heartbreaking conclusion that, in hindsight, seemed inevitable.
Yeah.
So, some of the other 2018 films, TV mm-hmm. shows that really kind of were just like, take your inherited drama and run with it. Freaking Hereditary.
Yes.
Obviously. Sharp Objects.
Never seen it.
It's an HBO show about a book. It's like, it's fucked.
Oh, is it?
Fucked. It's not like a horror film. It's more like a family melodrama. Okay. It's like a drama.
Okay.
But I'm kind of into dramas right now. Go figure.
There you go. HBO doesn't what? Doesn't very good. Doesn't very good.
Haunting of Hill House.
Still need to see that one. I know.
Also. Fucking amazing. Made me fucking cry.
Oh.
It'd been like good. Like, yeah, exactly. It was like, it's just like, again, familial trauma to a fucking T. Talks about like mental illness and like ghosts. Very similar vein to Hereditary, but mm-hmm. like explored for like 12 hours.
Interesting. All right. At some point I'm going to do it, listeners. Some point.
I'll make you do it.
Okay.
I'll put it on the list.
Let me finish the show we're covering at the end of this month and then I'll do it. There we go.
And then also Halloween, the 2018 remake.
Oh, that's right. That does explore that in a much more commercial sense.
But in a very commercial sense, yes. In the Home Alone, Macaulay Culkin, right? Trap-esque way. But still a very well-done movie.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
Very, very well done. Hereditary, Sharp Objects, and Haunting of Hill House are a little bit more, because Sharp Objects and Haunting of Hill House are both TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to be explored in a little bit lengthier way.
Yeah.
But Hereditary is a little bit more artsy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Halloween, which is just like, boom, explosion.
It's hitting into you, yeah.
Boom, like Laurie Strode being a badass. Like,
it does also have like a whole franchise to pull characteristics from. So that makes that journey a little bit easier.
But yeah, I agree. Yeah. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And we will talk about that Halloween movie eventually. I don't know when we get to it. We'll get to it.
Yeah, we have a lot of Halloween movies. We're sequential in our selections.
We're not close at all, but we will get there.
So it's okay. We're going to get closer by next month, so don't worry.
But yeah, so that's a little bit about like trauma in Hereditary. It's
trauma the movie.
It is. It's very fun to explore and very interesting to think about, because like watching this movie, if you experience mental health issues, if you experience like familial trauma yourself, like watching it, I'm just like, oh, this is telling me things about me I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So great stuff.
And there we go. We got to explore a little bit of artistic trauma there. Woo. You know, we saw the success story of this wonderful film and some, honestly, top-tier Letterboxd reviews so far.
It's true.
Up there. But now, Alex, now that we're here, what do you think of this wonderful film? And listeners, real quick, we're going to spoil the shit out of this, just so you know.
We already have.
And again, if you have made it, if you really want to, like...
ruin your fucking day.
Yeah, watch this movie. Definitely watch it.
I insist on watching it at night. I don't know if you should.
No, but... I demand that they watch it at night. Okay. Yeah, get the full effect.
It's true. I do, I mean, if you want to, like, how I usually watch it is, like, I will open up all the blinds, turn off all my lights, and just sit there in fucking darkness and mm-hmm. watch it. And I think it makes it worse.
No, I agree. I like to just curl up in a blanket in the fetal position as I watch it. That's mine. And hold my pillow, but, like, like make it, it's a long pillow, so like I have the little top part, little, like a head, and just cradle and the just head cuddle. Part.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm like, you were staying attached.
You're okay. No, I think this is my second time going into your question. So this is my second time watching the movie ever. The first time I watched it was for my Halloween or my October like horror fest last year. The second time I watched it, I was like, oh, should I be really high for this? No. Don't do it. I was not, but, like, as I was watching it, I had to, like, pause and, like, think to myself, I am so glad I did not get, like, super high for this, because I would have been horrified. I would have been uncomfortable and sad and would have probably just, like, turned it off.
Oh, I've done this one stoned. And
Please tell me a little bit about that, because, like, what's that like?
Oh, because the scene before all the shit goes down, main character's getting stoned. And
takes a fucking bong hit.
When you see a character also high, effectively portraying being high, and you're high, and you know shit's about to go down, you're like, oh, anxiety. Cool, anxiety. Wow, anxiety. Yeah.
And Alex Wolf fucking nails that shit.
He has that look, that emotional stoner look. He just does.
Like... Yeah.
I know. But yeah, this is a fantastic movie. This is honestly, but I mean, elaborate, please. I thought you were going to say more on.
I mean, I have many thoughts. Okay. There's just like, I don't even know where to start. No, this movie does a lot for me. I think it is one of the movies that, like, even though it's like, I don't know, 2 hours, it doesn't really feel that way because it is split instead of, like, it does have like the typical three act setup, but it also it's like it has three acts but also two halves, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. The acts are pretty far distributed, pretty far apart.
Yeah, they're few and far between.
yeah exactly.
But no, I really, really like it. It always made, like, it truly is one of those movies that, like, makes me feel like I'm being punched in the fucking stomach.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely.
And
it's heavy.
It's heavy. Like, and that Letterboxd review, I included it because that's really how I feel. Like, it's hard to sum it up in a way that makes sense, but, like, this is not a casual watch for me. This is not something that I can just, like, throw on and do other shit in the background. I mean, there's going to be some fucking edgelords who are like, I can watch Hereditary casually. Like, good for fucking you. I'm not one of those people.
Even me. Like, I assume I can. And then when I'm watching it, I'm like, maybe, was this a good idea?
No, it wasn't. Like for your casual horror watches, like, put on something like fucking Friday the 13th. Like, put on something like you can put on in the background and, like, whatever.
There's no camera winking in this one.
No.
Not in any kind of
sense.
There's
no humor.
Yeah.
There's no, like, there's nothing from, like, minute one to minute, like, to the very end. Like, you're just, like, first of all, sucked in. Like, it is visually fucking beautiful.
It's arresting. It's very arresting visually,
I
gotta say.
It is a beautiful movie. Like, the opening scene is a freaking,
like a diorama kind of thing?
No. Well, that part's also very cool. That opening, like, that opening,
yeah,
like, the very
with the miniature
first
and all that, yeah.
Very cool. I was thinking more, like, the opening, like, the very beginning where it's, funeral.
Yes,
like,
that's
it,
right.
From the very beginning, it's sad as shit. Like, but it also does such a good job of introducing the characters.
Yeah.
In a way that makes sense. Like, it's not just, like, zoom in on character. Here's character. Here's what you need to
Let
know.
Let me explain my motivations. No? Yeah. No? How about I act a goddamn fool and you assume what's going on here, and then we outburst and then that's the thing.
It's the showing, not telling.
Yeah.
That, like,
Smart.
Ari Aster's a fucking genius. Like, I said it. Like, I stand by it.
I agree. I want to see how this... He's comedy, apparently, for his third film.
Nightmare comedy.
That's so strange.
I mean, I will say, like, Midsommar does have, like, slightly more comedic moments.
But they're kind of like that nervous laughter. Like, oh, wow, okay, well, we're still fucked.
Yeah, it's that anxiety humor.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
And it's not... I wouldn't say Midsommar's a comedy by any stretch of the imagination, but I think, like, this was, like, because he viewed it as a drama, right? Like, he viewed this as a drama with, like, horror elements. I don't necessarily agree, but it's his movie, so
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's very dour. Yeah.
It's a sad movie.
Very dour.
So, your thoughts, please.
I love this film. I mean, I saw this again in 2018 in LA Live. So,
oh, wow.
Most notably, fantastic screen, great seats, terrible people. So that was my experience I saw with Adrian and Ruben. Shout out to Adrian and Ruben.
Hi, Adrian. Hi, Ruben.
We would just go to movies all the time together, you know?
Yeah.
And this is one of them where Ruben was very adamant about wanting to watch it. And I'm like, yeah, cool, show up and whatever. You know, it seems to have good reviews. And I wanted to watch it. And I was, like, even with those little fuckers behind us, I was like, oh, my God, I am gripped right now.
Like, you're just, like, gripping the seat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, to me, I was obviously getting witch vibes and stuff like that, like, initially. But like I said before, once Charlie's head hit the fucking pole and they do the close-up.
See, for me, like, it's that scene where, see, for me, I had a different experience with that scene because I knew it was going to happen.
Oh, you knew already. That's right. I didn't know. I was, no, I...
So
I was blindsided.
Fuck you. Fuck you, dude. No, I knew it was going to happen. And I, because, and here's the thing that frustrates me about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the movie itself. It is not the fault of the movie. It is the people who are around the movie. Mm-hmm. The fans of the movie hyped it up so much. That I was I purposely avoided watching this movie for 2 years.
Yeah.
Three years.
I know, yeah.
Because you told me to watch it. Everyone and their fucking mom was telling me to watch this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I purposely avoided watching it because it was so, like, everyone was, like, saying how badly it was going to fuck me up.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, I'm just not going to watch it then. Like, if it's
why would I do that to myself?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, why would I purposely go out of my way of, like, being that, like, like, you know what I mean? Like,
But then Halloween 2020, huh? That's when you watched it, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, I was just like, what are you talking about? No, but yeah, then Halloween 2020, I was like, okay, you know what? I give up. You win, bitches. I'm going to watch it. But one of the experiences that I had with it was, like, the first time my ex watched it.
Uh-huh.
And my ex, like, literally stopped what they were doing after that scene, paused the movie, came into, like, our room, woke me up, and needed to be consoled because they were so fucked up by it. And I was just like, oh, God, okay. Like, they're there. Like, I was just like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like they were that fucked up by it.
Yeah.
And it was that sad. And I was just like, you're 10 minutes in, like, you're like half an hour in. You
have a lot more movie left.
You have a lot more movie left. Like, go finish it. Like, I'm going back to bed.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that. I'm just like, a little understandable. Okay.
I mean, if you didn't know it was going to happen and you're at home and, like, you probably are attached to Charlie at this point because you've only seen the trailers and, like, you think, like, she's going to be a main character.
It's the Charlie show.
Right. Because, like, I mean, to be fair, at that point, I didn't know what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked Charlie. Like, I was just like, oh, this weird little, like, girl who at this point I only know is cutting heads off of birds. Like, that's the extent of what I knew.
Yeah. I mean, she seems like the underdog character. You always root for the underdog there. You know, you're sort of like, oh, this can turn around. No.
No, it cannot.
No, it does not.
There's no coming back from that.
Mm-mm. Well, and that's the thing, too. Like, watching it in theaters, you don't have anywhere to go. You paid for the damn ticket.
Yeah.
You're not going to go. You're just for sitting there stuck with it. For me, it's
the pop. Yeah. It's the pop of her head.
That close-up, though. I mean, the whole situation.
The close-up, like, because it's only a second.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of out of nowhere, so it is kind of, like, jarring in the sense that, like, that's about as close. Well, actually, no, that's a lie. In the first half of the movie, that's as close to a jump scare as we get.
Mm-hmm.
However, for me, it is the head, like, and then the screeching, the stopping, and just the glossy-eyed fucking stoner stare of Alex fucking Wolf.
Yeah.
Because, like, that shit, I was like, oh, I know that fucking feeling.
He knew he fucked up.
He knew, like, when, like, if, like, I mean, I've never, like, accidentally killed someone while stoned, but, like, doing something... Like, or, like, being high and, like, not really comprehending what you're doing and being confused, but also, like, fucked up. Mm-hmm. Like, that look, I was just like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I actually had a similar experience, not even close to this, but I do remember getting lit, like, stone, right? I just got back from college. I was depressed. I was like, this is how that was my coping mechanism. And I also like to take long showers. And I live with my parents, so...
Okay, continue.
I was fully just... fucking naked, fucking everything, stoned, in the shower, water's hot, and I go to turn it off.
Oh, no.
And then I break the handle, and I break it in the hot part. And so it's just nonstop hot water pouring down, and I can't stop it, and I'm stoned out my ass, and I'm naked, and I'm like, and I'm like struggling for a towel, but my dumb stone mind got one towel and pulled a towel on the side where the shower's at that I'm at, so I can barely, I'm washing myself with half a towel, with half a towel. And I'm like in my late 20s.
Oh my fucking
God. No, I'm in my late 20s, lit, still wet, and putting clothes on myself, but my body didn't have enough towel to dry, so I'm like, I'm with like a wet shirt, oh, you essentially.
Have like, yeah. Oh God.
Yeah, it's the shirt's just lashed onto my body, and I open the door, all you hear is just the like shower and steam, and I'm just like, God! Oh, yeah.
Oh my fucking God.
So it was like Hereditary.
You didn't just stand there and stare at the shower.
I was just like, why? I had to be in troubleshoot mode. I am not there.
For me, I think I've told this story before on the podcast, but one time I was visiting my stepdad, mm-hmm. and I got too high.
Yeah. Oh, that happens.
Like, it was, no, I, like, lights on, nobody home. Like, uh-huh. I was like.
It's like, what?
It was like straight indica with hash.
Mm. Oh boy, your body's floating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So from a bong.
Oh fuck.
And I took this bong hit and I was just like, cool. And then next thing you know, I realize I'm high. You know, like that self-aware moment, yeah. Uh-huh. When you're just like, oh wait, I'm fucked up. And yep. Then I was like, I'm gonna go sit down.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm couch locked like a motherfucker. And I was just like, guys, I think I'm freaking out. And my dad was like, why are we freaking out? It's fine. It's chill. We're fine. Yeah. You're fine. You're fine. Mm-hmm. And that just made me freak out more. And then I was just like sitting there like I could not move. Like I was
that's funny.
Dead fucking weight. And like I think if someone like took a video of me, I would have the same dead-eyed, glossy-eyed yep. stare. Like, oh, fuck.
You're like, even sitting down is stupid.
like literally, I wanted to like even like trying to put my feet up, like, on the recliner, I was just like, this is too much. This is too much. This is too much. The only thing that, like, kept me mildly aware was, like, I was like, this will not be forever. This mm-hmm. will not be forever. I will be okay. That was the only thing that, like, kept me from just properly losing my shit. And turns out, I was only like that for, like, an hour and a half.
Okay, but it feels like an eternity when it happens.
Oh, no. The whole time, I thought I was like that for like 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
Like, I thought I was like, oh, shit, I gotta fucking go. Like, mm-hmm. I thought I was fucked up. It was like an hour and a half before funny. I started coming back down to normalcy. Yeah.
See, whenever I've gotten that high, I usually put on a film to calm myself down and do a shower. So I remember the highest I've ever been was in college, and that happened. And I realized that I was okay by the end of Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump was my barometer for, okay, two hour and a half hour movie, 2 hours, whatever it is,
I need
by
to,
the 90 minute mark, I'm good.
I need to find a movie like that. Like, I need it to be, like, Toy Story or something that, like, will just, like, make, like, I can just, like, focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it was just, like, too overwhelming, like, everything. Yeah. Like, my dad was like, do you want me to put music on? Like, I was just like, no! Nothing.
Let me just sit here and die.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. So the thought of driving while that high, let alone dealing with a sibling who's going into anaphylactic shock, like,
yeah.
I was just like, oh God.
Yeah, yeah. Or your shower goes insane because you broke a handle.
Yeah.
You know, nothing like sharp metal. I'm pretty sure I jerked off before that, so it was just...
So you were just like...
I'm like, don't step in there too much without shoes.
Oh my fucking God! Oh my God, Anthony Fuentes.
That is my life. Like
your late 20s was like a fucking shit show, wasn't it?
Sometimes, yeah. My late 20s was such a shit show. I gotta say.
Because I met you when you turned 30, so.
I will tell anybody who's scared about turning 30, don't be scared. it gets way easier. Gets way easier from 30 onward from what I, from so far. I'm still in the early parts of it. But like, late 20s were so tumultuous for me.
Thanks.
They were
looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah, you're like in the shit right now. Oh, poor child. Anyways, yeah.
You're in the shit.
But I feel like, you know, there's obviously a lot of circumstances going around. Since we're talking about trauma right now, you know? Well, but, yeah.
Like okay. Yeah, let's... Oh, Jesus Christ.
This movie just lets you unload. But I will just say, yeah, anybody worried, 30s aren't that big a deal. In fact, once you're over that hump, because it's so anxiety-producing going into it, once you realize it's not that bad, really, it's very freeing. It's very freeing.
I think you just had your Saturn return, and then you were just, like, fucking fine. For those of you who don't know, astrology is...
Yeah, so please explain why you look in my eyes and tell me a term I don't know.
Yeah, so when you're, like, 27-ish going into your 30s, basically mm-hmm. Saturn returns to the same spot that you were at when mm-hmm. you were born.
Oh.
It's called your Saturn return, and basically it's, like, a cosmic event where, like, life just kind of kicks your ass into the path that, like, you need to be on.
Oh, thank God. Okay, that definitely happened.
So, yeah. Yeah, and yeah. Most people, like, in around the ages of, like, 27 to, like, 31 or so kind of have that, like, moment of, like, life kicking their ass. Like, it sucks for a couple years, yeah. And then life kind of just, like, kicks their ass into gear, and then...
Oh, it's like high school, too.
That yeah, 4 years. Didn't you mention it as, like, second puberty?
Second puberty is from 31 onwards.
Great.
Yeah.
Love that for me. Oh, man. But this movie, like...
Yeah.
Bringing it back. Like, this movie brings up a lot of, like, I don't know, like, weird family feels.
It does. I mean, it helps me reflect on times, even though I love my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still a family. You're still people that, like, you have seen for most of your life, most days, for the longest time.
The good and the bad. Or yeah, even remembering...
Through good and bad, exactly.
Or even remembering, like, the early shit, like, mm-hmm. before, like, because, like, we both come from families where, like, our parents had us relatively young.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like,
exactly.
They're basically learning too. They're children raising children.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're learning and, like, you know, like...
You're there for the anxieties.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're totally there for it. And
it reminded me of, like, a lot of that shit. Like, mm-hmm. the dinner scene in particular
mm-hmm.
was, like, the most... For me, it's the most upsetting scene in the movie.
Oh, it is...
Like, yeah. That tense, quiet, like... Oh, like mm-hmm. it is like I don't want to say triggering, but it is like it gave me like this like visceral feeling of being 10 years old at my parents' like kitchen table, like yeah. right before they got divorced, like that kind of shit.
Yeah. I mean, and then another one for me too is when she like interrupts her son when he's sleeping and he wakes up and she's just like, I didn't want to have you. Yeah, and so, he's just like, oh.
Clarifying question. Was that a dream, or did that actually happen?
It was a dream.
It was a dream, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like a little vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Because then she actually wakes up, and then she wakes him up for real, and was like, I'm sorry mm-hmm. for all the shit I said. Okay, just making sure.
But that conversation plays out organically at first. Like, you don't know it is
yeah,
that.
Okay.
And, like, to me, that was like, I was like, well, I remember being an accident. So, I was, in my mind, I was like, imagine your mama having that conversation and, like
it, and it's, telling you, yeah.
But it's such a grounded, real-feeling conversation, especially with the anxieties they have going forward.
Well, especially all the previous contexts that you have where, like, you know, she, like, sleepwalked and, like, doused mm-hmm. them in fucking, like, gasoline or whatever.
Yeah, she's
you know?
Like, I wasn't gonna do it.
You were asleep. You didn't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But... Oh my gosh. But no, I mean, back to my thoughts on the movie. Good film. I like this movie.
We talked for 18 minutes about their thoughts on the movie.
Oh, we did. Okay, next question.
So, I kind of talked about this in the theory section, but mm-hmm. how do you feel Hereditary separates itself from other films that entirely rely on female neuroticism?
Do we have to talk about horror films or just films in general?
You could talk about exploitation films. That's a great one also, if you want. I mean, you can talk about any.
I'm trying to think of, like, what I would compare it to, though.
Well, like, we could talk about, like, Rosemary's Baby. We can talk about, there's, like, The Brood. We can talk about pretty much any Cronenberg film ever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of different movies that you can pull from. You can talk about Martyrs. You can talk about, like...
Okay, I've seen Rosemary's Baby. I haven't seen the rest of them.
Okay.
But I will say, from that example, and then from what I've heard, even the way Cronenberg portrays female characters.
Right, you can also just speculate here. I know, it's kind of a question, but yeah.
But in from my estimation, and what I've seen again with how Cronenberg portrays female characters, right. And of course, even other Polanski films, piece of shit. But this film is a lot more honest and respectful of the female perspective, it feels like.
I agree.
At least tries to ground it in ways the other films still are kind of tied to their culture at the time.
Uh-huh.
And they tend to bring that baggage with it in certain scenes. And I don't think this one has that problem at all. It's honest all the way through.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I will also say that this movie is less exploitative.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly.
I will also say, on the flip side of that, this movie is, like, sexless. Like,
yes. Quite a weird one for a horror film, for sure.
Well, but when it comes to talking about, like, female neuroticism, like, usually it's tied to, like, hysteria and, like, it's very sexual.
That's what, yes, I'm pointing at Alex right now, but when you said hysteria, that's kind of what I was thinking. Yes,
and, it, like...
But they play it in a lot of other films in such a burdensome way.
Yes.
This does not do that.
And it's, like, it's very interesting, and it's almost like it's part of, like, the damsel in distress, where I'm like, mm-hmm. Fucking crazy, yeah. Tell me.
And this, meanwhile, the husband's sitting here be like, okay, we're gonna get through this.
Right, and he's like, he wants to help her. Like, it's not like, it's not that he doesn't love her, it's not that he doesn't, like, care. He wants to support her, he just doesn't know how, because there's demons in the house, bro.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think this movie does a great job at separating itself from other films that do rely on female neuroticism.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because, like I said, completely sexless. Mm-hmm. And it's a very interesting take versus, like, something like Midsommar, which is a little bit more sexualized. And I'm not saying that in, like, a bad way or a good way. I'm just simply stating it as it is.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting take because that's not explored really as much.
I mean, when you talk about the films we were talking about before, like... The act of sex, I feel like, drives a lot of the narrative, too.
Exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, things like I Spit on Your Grave or Last House on the Left, like rape revenge films, basically. Yes. Mm-hmm. Those movies inherently are tied to, like, sex and power and, like, you know, rape.
Yes.
So it's very, it's different.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. And that's what I think is so evocative about for this film.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
No, I agree.
It's an interesting take, in my opinion.
And it's an intelligently done take, I think. Which, again, I would describe it as honest. It does its best to be honest.
It's honest, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I feel like a lot of the films are kind of speculative sometimes when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
At least, it's, you know, they could be good. But there are certain scenes where the director's bias is shown.
Oh, yeah. The director is just like, okay, now she needs to be naked. Like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So.
And where here, it's just like, this is a family drama. We're going to replace all the nudes with arguments about your patronage.
Right. And or, then, I mean,
paternity.
I understood.
Yeah. Patronage.
Thank you for your patronage.
Yeah, oh, would you like any more demon relics, please?
I have two more in the back.
Mm-hmm.
This
one will help you summon an even cooler demon.
A less minor god of all the naked people are in, like, the last 20 minutes of the movie. And they're terrifying!
Yeah, that's not played for eroticism.
No.
That's played for function.
It's played for terror, motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
So, going off of that, what about this film unsettled you in ways that others don't?
This is one of the most effective uses of slow burn as a tactic.
Okay.
And I think slow burn doesn't know when to, you know, pick up, typically. Mm-hmm. Hereditary has such good characters and good aesthetics. When shit hits the fan, you're blindsided in a way that you can't look away.
When shit goes sideways, it fucking goes sideways.
And the thing, it doesn't just go sideways once or a couple times. Like, once it happens that first real time with Charlie and the pole, there are sporadic scenes spread throughout the film that they do the same thing. They will slow burn you, but the slow burn that you're getting is less and less as the film goes through until the end, when things finally culminate.
Yes.
I don't know. The way it toys with your emotions and investments into its narrative is something that it's so expertly crafted. How do other films compete with that in terms of building an unsettling feeling?
Yeah.
You know? This is one that does it right, and it's purely from pacing and just filmmaking fundamentals. The fundamentals are just that goddamn good.
Agreed.
That's why I'm unsettled every time I freaking watch it. Because you know what? It it strings me along the entire time, every freaking time.
So for me, and this is something I recently discovered about myself, I really like dramas.
Yeah, dramas are cool.
I enjoy drama films because of the anxiety that, like, it's almost like the same way that good thrillers and good horror films build anxiety, right? Yeah. And I talked about this before in other theory corners about films of the body, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's melodramas, pornography, and horror films. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the ones. And I realized, I'm like, well, I mean, there's pornography, right? but no, like, I do really enjoy dramas, right?
Yeah.
And because, like, they have this, like, really, in, like, they sew anxiety into the plot so well.
Sew it into the plot. I like the way you put that, yes.
And I didn't realize that I enjoyed it as much as I did.
Well,
I recently watched All About Eve for the first time, and I was just like, I was fucking mind blown. Given this is like one of like the best movies of all time, and it has like a 99% like on everything, and it's like,
I haven't seen it yet.
It's really good, like really fucking good.
I got it back into my cinema brain.
I mean, I would have never seen it if like my arm wasn't like, no, it wasn't twisted. It wasn't twisted, but it suggested that I watch it.
Gotcha.
But it was so fucking good. And it was like, there's like aspects of it that I can absolutely see being used in horror. Mm-hmm. And I never would have guessed that.
Yeah.
But for me, like in what unsettled me the most in Hereditary is the, specifically Toni Collette screaming.
Yeah.
Like her acting in this is like it doesn't even feel like she's acting, like it's so genuine and like terrifying. Like people, like one of the criticisms are saying that she overacted this, and I'm just like, I don't think she overacted this. I think like that is exactly how someone like who has lived through everything she just lived through would react.
I mean, to me, I agree, because if when somebody says that criticism, I'm like, okay, maybe because a lot of the characters are understated, or I can understand that. But when you factor in her dealing with her mom's friend, like there are other characters that kind of complement that. It's just you are given Toni Collette the entire time.
She is giving it her 120%.
Yeah,
and it is so obvious.
You know what? Also, though, now that actually, I don't know why a thought just came to my head right now. Another thing that really makes this film unsettling is it kind of has this aesthetic, almost feels a little Stephen King like. It has a Maine sort of feel to it.
With interesting.
The cabin, the woods, the isolation. Is it because of the woods? Yeah, but then also, like, look at the kind of road he had to go through to even drive his sister and the house party.
I saw it and I thought it had Antichrist vibes.
Oh, see, there you go. But, like, but I do feel like King's visuals and how people, the directors over the years, which we've covered many films.
We've covered so many Stephen King movies.
Right? How they've portrayed his stories. This is feels like a similar portrayal for something that's totally not King or even close to King, really. Like, but it does seem like it's following a lot of those fundamentals. And that's what makes it just in an underlying way very disturbing without even realizing it.
I feel like Ari Aster took like everything he learned in film school and was like, he just listened and was just like, I'm going to take these basics and like truly treat them as fundamentals and build on it to make something that is truly my own.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly.
And the thing about him, and I forgot to mention this, is he has like 10 movies. Like, he pulled Guillermo del Toro. He has like all the movies that he ever wants to make like outlined already.
Yeah.
Like, he knows what he wants to do over his career in film. So
that's good.
I'm really fucking excited to see like the movies that he comes out with next.
Same here, man. COVID.
I know. 4 hours, though, like, I will probably just, like, watch that at home, just so I can, you know.
Oh, by the end of it, people are like, hey, can you just do a show, man? He's like, nah, that's not how my act structure works. I'm sorry.
That's just not how it works. So, why do you think this film became so popular?
You know what? I'm gonna go ahead and say, the shock value.
I think captured
people enough where a lot of people had to see it. And it also comes in an era we've talked about before, especially in our Witch episode, where this like new slow burn style horror kind of took over, right? Or has become this 824's horror has its own set of rules. And Hereditary, I think, is the perfect storm of paced and commercial enough that casual people can watch it, be terrified. It'll fuck them up, but they can do it. And like, and A24 style hitting its peak. So Hereditary is kind of, timed perfect for when it came out to me. And, of course, pre-COVID, so it's still in a time when everybody's sharing everything. And we don't have much else to worry about besides our own lives. Our own lives.
I saw people, like, sharing drinks in, like, a TV show, and I was like, God.
I see people inside without masks on a TV show. I'm like, oh, this is an old show.
Or outside.
Or outside in groups waiting in lines. Waiting in fucking lines next to each other.
People in clubs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Try watching Seinfeld now. You're like, no, that's not safe. I used to share my drinks with my boys. We'd all three get a different drink.
And when we would go out, I almost sent you this thing where it was just like, oh, remember when you'd get a drink and be like, oh, this is really good. And then you want to try it?
Yeah. Me, you, Adrian, and Ruben just passing drinks to each other.
We'd all just like do a round robin of sharing drinks. And now I'm just like, oh my God. That's so unsanitary. I miss it, though.
I do.
I'm this close to getting vaccinated.
That's good. Yeah, and for listeners, so you know, the tiny hand motion.
I like
not like a wide hand. I'm this close.
My arms
fix
are not.
Me.
My arms are not wide open now. Okay. Okay. Let's see. So do you think this movie benefits from multiple watches, or it's a one and done?
Multiple watches.
Okay.
Next question.
Moving on. No, I actually do have a follow up to that.
Okay.
So I want to talk about the back. Like 20 minutes of the movie, like the climax, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Where shit just really hits the fan. Like basically from the moment, the father husband like bursts into flames. Mm-hmm. Like from that moment on, I would say that all just kind of goes to hell.
Yeah, everything kind of escalates from there on.
Well, that's where you get like a lot of the jump scares. Like, mm-hmm. That's when you have, like, naked people lurking in the house, and, like, you have, like, a guy. Like truly, there is one jump scare in this movie that, like, always gets me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it twice, and it got me both times. And,
Which one was it?
Well, so, Toni Collette's on the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Peter is staring at his dad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not staring at Peter staring at his dad. I'm staring at Toni Collette on the fucking ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, like, skitters off.
Yeah.
And then you don't know where she is, but then suddenly you're looking at someone else in, it's hard to explain if you haven't seen the movie, sorry, but the way the camera's focused, the camera's looking at Peter, and then in the back, there's a naked man smiling.
Yep.
And then out of, like, the front, Toni Collette comes running.
Yeah.
Because I don't see her. Mm-hmm. Like, she's there. If you're looking for her, you can see her, but I don't see her.
Well, the naked man kind of took the attention.
Exactly.
Away. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, that's the goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see her, and so it makes me jump every fucking time. Like I just like lose it. I'm just like, oh my God.
Oh, that's funny.
So that's the jump scare that gets me every time. That and then also Alex Wolff throwing himself out the fucking window.
Oh my God. Yeah. But I mean, like, okay. So what about the back section though of the movie?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I was just asking, like, kind of like your thoughts on rewatching the movie. Does the second half get, or like, or
does
the
it last diminish 20 minutes, at all?
Or? Does it diminish or does it get better? Because like for me, I appreciated the last 20 minutes a lot more. I hated the last 20 minutes the first time I watched it. The second time I did, I appreciated it a lot more. So I'm curious on your thoughts.
Oh no, I honestly, to me, it's I appreciate it each time, but mostly because it finally gives you things that horror movies generally give you in almost every single one of them, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it does it still in a way with that Ari Aster finesse.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it, and it's effective because you still sat through a family drama to get there, and the family's doing it, and it feels earned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it never does not feel earned.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that just is a strength to the whole movie, and the power of the visuals in the back half. Really, like, it'll never look cheap. It'll always be like that slick kind of, like, you'll find something to appreciate every time. You definitely will, because it's not common imagery. All these naked people, they're not models.
No, they're just people.
They're just people. But like, even then, like the way they're shot, the way they're in the dark, Toni Collette fucking sawing her head off.
Sawing her own head off, which
there's just, and these are all practical
which
effects.
Which is actually Toni Collette, by the way.
Oh my God.
Like the practical effect did it up. So she's actually sawing her own head off, but they set it up that, like, yeah.
Right. But yeah, again, see, that's just good filmmaking right there. I think the last bit, it's so well done. Like, even if that's not something that's on your radar when you watch movies, you'll still find yourself engaged, I think.
Agreed.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Now for our segment.
Yes. What is it?
Hereditary is now a Broadway winning musical. What is the title of its most popular song?
Oh, shit. I didn't even look down at that one. Fly, Charlie, fly.
I didn't even think of it. Usually I have something prepared, but I really just wanted to hear Fly, Charlie, fly. That's a good one.
Fly, Charlie, fly.
Oof. At the dinner table.
Oh, there you go. I like it. At the dinner table. Oh, we got more songs. What else we got here?
Yeah.
What else we got here? You should have never been born.
Up in smoke.
Up in smoke. Seesaw for me, Ma.
That's horrible. That is not a good one. That is a bad one. That's getting workshopped. I like Fly, Charlie, Fly.
Fly, Charlie, Fly. There you go.
God. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's my favorite. All right, you win.
There we go.
And finally, because we all know what the kill of the film of this movie is, rate this movie out of 5 soul-shattering screams.
5? It's 5.
Okay.
This is a number. Yeah, 5 for me.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
4.5.
Okay. I respect it. I totally respect it. What dings the slight point?
It loses me in parts. I would say probably like half, like there's parts of it where it just kind of like lulls a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's still anxious.
Yeah.
But like it just kind of like lulls.
It doesn't have a lot of story progress in certain parts, definitely.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a great fucking movie. It's more just a dessert. It's more like a ding due to my shitty attention span than anything else.
Totally is your rating.
Yes. but yeah, otherwise I do really, really enjoy this movie. And I do also agree. I think it benefits from multiple watches.
Yeah.
I got more out of it the second time I watched it than I did the first time.
Yeah. Honestly,
the first time I missed Payman, like the little vroom, vroom and entering Alex after he jumped out the window. I missed that in its entirety the first time. So.
Yeah. Oh my God. No. Yeah. Now that you even mentioned that, I'm like, 5. It's just a 5 for me. To me, it's a perfect example of how you do horror in a contemporary way. Really.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and I am so, like, before we close this, I'm just so, so fucking excited to see what Ari Aster does.
Me too. I can't wait.
And yeah, I will hold my Ari Aster 5 for probably when we do Midsommar.
Oh, I know you are. I remember watching it with you. Yep,
yeah.
Yep,
so definitely. We will cover Midsommar eventually. We're not going to do I don't know.
2 Ari Aster films in a year? No.
I think that's a lot.
That is a lot. Yeah. We already have our stuff picked out anyways. We know the answer to this question.
Yeah. We already have everything plotted till June, July.
Till the finale. So yeah, we're good. We're good.
So,
on a lighter note, next week is the exact opposite of this.
Yeah, please. What's the hint at the that was Hereditary from 2018, directed by Ari Aster. Please hint at us for next week, Anthony, our palate cleanser. Good God.
Definitely a palate cleanser. You know me. I like to pick the occasional left field kind of pick here.
For your birthday month.
For my birthday month. This is a very cheery, very fun. It's a video game episode. We're bringing our video game boys in here.
You're saying it's going to be a clusterfuck of laughter.
Oh, it's going to be a clusterfuck of laughter.
So the swear jar need not show up because...
No. I'm not going to be able to control myself. I'm definitely not. But it's also... It involves not just a franchise that I'd love in my heart, but a character that is near and dear to me, and I can't wait to write about him. So...
It's going to be a fun time.
We'll find that next week.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, until then, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes and writing a review if you haven't already. It does help other people find us, so if you want to help spread the love, please do it. Please, please, please. Yeah,
and we've been getting more new listeners, so you know what?
You guys are fucking awesome. That's so cool.
Thanks, guys.
You guys are the fucking best.
Thanks for checking the backlog. Yeah.
Woo! Let's see. And then if you want to stay up to date with the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod. Mm-hmm. And then we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. And if you want to drop us a line, you can probably just hit us up on Instagram.
Yeah. We'll respond.
Yeah. Eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there. Anthony's really busy at work, and I'm busy being depressed. So.
Hey! Two very taxing,
It's true. And then until then, don't just call 911 if your sister's going into anaphylactic shock and you're at a party. Don't drive her.
Oh, that's scary even to think about. Bye, guys.